Fancy a game?
Technically correct.
Hard shell, soft shell, different types of meats, different types of cheeses.
With Tyler Bischoff.
Chaos.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Will you be a lousy scab or will you be a man?
Hello, construction site Corona. Mike Grilmala will join the show a little bit later. UNLV and Loyola Marymount are going to play tonight on my Twitter feed, 30th anniversary of that high-scoring game between UNLV and Loyola Marymount from 1990. We will get a little bit into the NHL and what they could be doing in the future, but we're going to start with the Raiders and Mike Mayock's offseason with the main focus on the Raiders not giving out signing bonuses to free agents. First off, a tweet from SpotTrack, who cite the track salary cap stuff in the NFL. Mayock is using first or second year roster bonuses to keep cap and cash flow consistent and dead cap at a minimum. The Raiders also, as far as I know, they've only given out a signing bonus to one player, and that was Nelson Aguilar. It was less than $200,000 in a signing bonus, and it was simply to help them have a lower cap hit on Nelson Aguilar. But that is it. They've given out less than $200,000 in signing bonuses this year. First off, by the way, side note, why is the NFL salary cap so complicated?
I don't understand why they have one.
That too. In the NHL, like, you sign a guy to a contract and that's it. Like, there is nothing else that goes into it. It's a fully guaranteed contract. And the way you figure out the cap it is, well, what's the total number or the average number of dollars he's going to get over the life of that contract? And that's the guy's cap hit. That's as complicated as it gets in the NHL. In the NFL, it's like, well, we don't really know what we're going to do here. We're going to have guaranteed money sometimes. We're going to have signing bonuses sometimes. We're going to have Marcus Mariota's incredible performance-based contract. Like, in the NHL, the only way you can get a performance is if you're over 35. Those are the only guys that are allowed to have performance-based contracts.
It's also fun that there are ways that you can literally, like, hey, you know how you were going to cost us a bunch of money? We're going to convert that to this other thing with this other thing involved in it. But somehow Tom Brady's going to only cost $7 million this year.
We just moved it to another Excel spreadsheet, and we're good.
And somehow there's always teams that are like, we're up against the cap, and we've only won four games.
That too. That happens a lot too. But I don't know why it's so complicated. But anyways, in Mike Mayock's offseason, before we get into the signing bonus part of it, I think one of the best things he's probably done is they haven't made any, like, long-term deals this offseason. They haven't, like, if they whiff on everything this offseason, right? If they're just terrible, like, none of their evaluations were good, all the players they signed ended up being bad, it's not going to hurt them for that long, because the longest deal he gave out was Corey Littleton. Corey Littleton got a 3-year deal, but only the first two are guaranteed. And that's pretty much it. Like, no, he's getting $12 million, so he's getting quite a bit, but it's only for 2 years. Otherwise, everybody else is on a 1 or a 2-year deal. Like, everybody else, they can pretty much just, all right, he didn't work out this year, we're done with that. So it's more important that the Raiders added good players, right, to see if they actually can have a chance to go to the playoffs in 2020. But as far as long-term flexibility, as far as the long-term health of this team, very good. Like, they've done a good job at not strapping themselves into any of these contracts.
I'm trying to figure out how much guaranteed money Nesip got, because he got a 3-year deal. But
that is true. But it was 17 of 25, right? It was a $25 million deal, and 17 was guaranteed.
That sounds right. But
he's in the same boat as Littleton, where it's 2 years. Like, if you struck out on Nesip, okay, you got to live with it for 2 years. That's not really that bad. So you've got two guys effectively that it's like, all right, 2 years, if he sucks, we can eat that and figure it out later. The rest of it is pretty much, all right, we'll see what you are in year one and then go from there. So long-term health for the Raiders could be very good. Like, Mike Mayock's done a good job of getting better players on the roster without actually sacrificing much in the long term. But there is another angle to this. Mike Garofolo, earlier in the week, tweeted out about Eli Apple, how he signed a $6 million deal with the Raiders for 1 year, and it's fully guaranteed. But he also added this in his reporting. No signing bonus, as has been the case with the Raiders' deals this spring. Cash flow is apparently an issue. And what that essentially means is the Raiders, it's not about salary cap space or anything like that. It's they physically do not have the cash to pay out signing bonuses right now. Like, these guys sign their contracts and, oh, there, here's a big signing bonus. They do not have the cash to pay that, is what Mike Garofalo is suggesting there. So, if we go back in time a little bit, the Raiders had traded Khalil Mack. And this was never really a confirmed report, but there were the assumptions and the rumors that the Raiders, they didn't necessarily want to pay a defensive player over $20 million, but it was more that Mark Davis couldn't pay Khalil Mack over $20 million up front. And that is a big reason why Khalil Mack might have gotten traded. Again, not reported. What are you angry about?
I brought this up like three times while that was going on.
Yeah, and?
You just are like, oh yeah, no one talked about it. I was talking about
it. I didn't say no one talked about it. I said it wasn't a confirmed report. We had a whole conversation about it on the show.
I don't listen.
It wasn't like Adam Schefter reported, Mark Davis has $74.16 in the bank, so they have to trade Khalil Mack. Right? We didn't get that type of report. We just got, Mark Davis might not have very much money.
All right, fair enough. But I thought that the way the system worked, it was like, this is the only thing that makes sense. So it was like reverse engineering confirmation.
Yeah, maybe. But they seemed very adamant that they didn't want to give a defensive player over $20 million. And they still haven't done that.
They haven't given anybody any signing bonuses.
They did give their right tackle over $20 million, but they haven't given a defensive player over $20 million yet. So potentially they lose Khalil Mack because they don't have the cash flow to pay it a couple of years ago. And then that could be another reason why they whiffed on Byron Jones, who was the number one cornerback on the market, who went to the Dolphins despite the Raiders offering more money per year. Now, Vic Tafer reported the Dolphins gave Byron Jones a guaranteed third year on his contract, and the Raiders were not willing to guarantee beyond the first 2 years. So that's one reason. But a second reason very easily could be he got a $15 million signing bonus from the Dolphins. And the Raiders didn't have a $15 million signing bonus to offer him. So it's very possible that Byron Jones saw that and said, all right, I'm not going to the Raiders because I want $15 million as soon as I sign my name on this contract. But again, going back in time, this time just a couple of months, how does Mark Davis not have cash flow? Just a couple of months ago, do you remember the Raiders sold the land that their practice facility sits on in Henderson for $191 million. This was a couple of months ago where they bought the land from Henderson for $6 million, started building their practice facility, and then decided we're going to sell the land for $191 million. Now, the Review Journal story, because I'll admit I've got no idea what happens when businesses decide to sell the land that they own and rent it back, but that's what the Raiders did. The Review Journal wrote a story about it, and the expert they consulted said there's two reasons you do this if you're the Raiders. Number one would be to try to get out of some sort of taxes, right? You sell it to somebody else and they've got to worry about the taxes, or you sell it to somebody who doesn't have to pay as much taxes as you. Some sort of tax break can be involved, though they couldn't figure out what it would be for the Raiders because they sold it to a private company. But somehow there could have been a tax break involved. But the other reason, the number two reason you do this, is because you get $191 million right then. You essentially get an interest-free loan because presumably you're paying it back in rent over the course of 20, 30 years, but you get $191 million right then. Where did that go? Mark Davis conceivably should have $191 million. Where is it? Like, do they have to spend it somewhere else? That's the only thing that makes sense, right? Like, you're going to tell me now, hey, we don't have enough money to pay a $15 million signing bonus to Byron Jones or any other free agent, but we just got $191 million. Where did that go? So it doesn't make any sense that they don't have the cash to spend on signing bonus. Like, where is the cash flow? They just made a deal to get $191 million. They should have cash, but they don't.
Maybe they do have cash, and this is just a failing of Mike Mayock. Maybe he's just like, no signing bonuses.
Okay, maybe.
Signing bonuses are stupid,
but
we're going incentives.
He gave incentives to Mariota and then a little bit to Jason Witten. Did anybody else get major incentives? I don't remember any other reports of major incentives. What would be the benefit of a GM, though, to not give out signing bonuses?
Because that money's just poof gone.
I guess.
And if you are running on a budget, having money that's...
But if you're running on a budget, then again, it goes back to where's the cash flow. Like, if we're saying it's not cash flow at all, we're just saying it's Mike Mayock. Mark Davis says, here's $191 million if you want to give out signing bonus. He said, no, not at all. Why?
Next year's free agent class, you're going to have a lot of signing bonuses?
Maybe. I don't know. I just...
How many first-round picks do they have this year? Two?
Two.
That money has to go into escrow. So maybe, because those are four-year, fully guaranteed contracts.
So they're saving up money because they had to draft three last year and they've got two this year. They're saving up money for all the first-round picks.
Yeah. Okay. I've actually seen this screw me over in Madden. Where I was like, I drafted too many first round picks and now I'm over the cap limit.
Yeah. I mean, it's just to me, the cash flow thing doesn't make sense if they actually got $191 million for their practice facility. Like, if that's what they actually got, how do they not have cash flow to pay out? You know, if they gave every free agent they had a signing bonus, it still would have been less than $50 million, right? Like, it would not have been. A significant chunk of that $191 million. So if they got that, where'd it go? Like, what did they spend it on besides the actual football team or the actual players on the football team?
They're going to have some really nice new uniforms. They hired the company that came up with UNLV's logo.
There you go. All right, one other Raiders story. Over the weekend, they signed Eric Kush, a backup offensive guard. What's been a rumor before free agency started, and it's probably died off a little bit since we've gotten through the majority of free agency, but they signed Eric Kush and made it a little bit more of a possibility, but they could get rid of Gabe Jackson because Gabe Jackson this year will count $9.6 million against the cap, but it's not guaranteed. So the Raiders can release him or trade him, and that money will not count against the cap. They'll have no dead cap that counts against them. So Gabe Jackson could be gone. Like, they could just get rid of him. They could trade him away for something, and that doesn't hurt them at all, unlike most players that have guaranteed money left. And that's been something that's rumored throughout the offseason for the Raiders. The thing is, I don't think it makes any sense to get rid of Gabe Jackson right now, because I think he's by far the team's best option at guard. And if you look at the rest of the roster, I mean, Kush comes in, but he's 31. He's played for the Chiefs, Rams, Bears, and Browns over the last 6 years. Like, he is the definition of journeyman backup offensive lineman. He's made 19 starts over his 6 years in the NFL. He's a backup offensive lineman. I can't imagine he's coming in to start. The other guard on the roster is Denzel Good, who's 29 years old. He's got 28 career starts, and he had a decent season last year. He had to make five starts because of injuries and Richie Incognito, but I don't know that Denzel Good would be the answer. On the roster, he would be if he got rid of Gabe Jackson. I don't know if he's better than Gabe Jackson, and the only reason to clear up $9+ million in cap space right now would be because you had somewhere else to spend it that would be better. And I don't know that there are free agents that are worth spending it on. Like, there's no guards out there that are going to be better than Gabe Jackson that you bring in as a free agent. But let's say you decide Denzel Good is going to be your offensive guard. What other guys are you bringing in, right? At other positions? Is there anybody else in free agency right now that you'd be like, oh, we need to spend $9 million on that guy?
No, not
yeah,
really.
I mean, there's some guys you might go get. Like, there's some other cornerbacks that are like Eli Apple level. Like, I think Prince Amukamara is still a free agent, and Logan
Jonathan
Ryan,
Joseph.
I think, is still out there. Like, there's still cornerbacks, but they're Eli Apple level. And so you're going to sign them for $4 or $5 million. And are they even better than the Eli Apple guy you brought in? Then you don't want to start him anyway. So, like, there's guys out there, but it's not really anybody that would provide more value than Gabe Jackson. Because Gabe Jackson's going to be starting on your offensive line, whereas whoever, Prince Amukamara, whatever it is going to be a backup cornerback. So it wouldn't make sense to me for them to get rid of Gabe Jackson. Like, it contract-wise, it does, because there's no dead money involved at this point. But as far as building the team and actually trying to win games, Gabe Jackson probably needs to stay. Technically correct, we're brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com. Bischoff's Briefs.
I went on the internet this week.
Oh, God.
And I found this.
Bischoff's Briefs.
There's a lot of porn piling up on the internet.
It doesn't download itself.
Bischoff's Briefs.
I think I get it. I think I get it.
NFL general managers want the draft to be postponed.
So there's a committee of GMs, seven of them. And they voted 6-1 to recommend to the NFL that the draft be postponed. That's according to Diana Russini of ESPN. But Roger Goodell and the NFL are still planning on having the NFL draft on April 23rd through the 25th, the original scheduled date. So the reason the GMs want the draft delayed is they think there's going to be competitive advantages for teams that are in states or cities that are not in some sort of full lockdown with less severe situations compared to teams that are in cities with much more severe coronavirus situations.
What cities are not, like Green Bay?
Sure.
Who else? Because the rest of them are all in major cities, aren't they?
I mean, but like California and New York are being hit the hardest at the moment.
Well, and now Florida is too.
Yeah.
And
so
I
like
assume...
So conceivably in a month from now, there will be some places that aren't quite as bad as the rest. And you'll be able to go into your facility and do whatever you want. Whereas in California right now, you can't go into your facility.
What's in the facility that you need?
Well, you can be together. Otherwise, you want John Gruden and Mike Mayock trying to Skype each other while they draft somebody? I mean, yes, we want that.
Yes, but like, I do.
It's not ideal to
I want John Gruden to be talking and Mike Mayock to be going, all I can see is your living room. You have to turn the camera around. And then John Gruden flipped the camera and go, now I can't see you.
But that's their concern. I think, however, the draft should go on. Like, there is a worry that they don't get to do their pre-draft evaluations as normal, where they don't get to actually meet the guys or work them out or go to workouts, whatever. I think the draft should go on as normal because the NFL is in the best spot of any league in this country because this happened in their offseason, and it happened right before the transactional part of the offseason started, right? There's no actual events that they have to get through this part of the NFL calendar. Whereas every other sport in this country is like having to cancel games, postpone games, cancel tournaments. Whereas the NFL, they don't have to worry about that just yet. They can wait and they can do free agency and they can do the draft without actually having people see each other or come in contact with each other.
Am I the only one that if I'm Jerry Jones, I'm going, I respect what you're trying to say, but instead we're actually going to, instead of 3 days, we're doing 21.
They should.
Each, like we are multiplying 3 days per round, every single, like, every team gets a couple hours.
Adam Schefter today was suggesting they do 7 days for the draft. Each round gets its own day. And he's like, whatever the clock is, you get a much longer clock because we want to make this thing last as long as we can every night.
Yeah.
So, I'd be on board for a seven-day draft where every round gets its own day because what else are we doing with our time right now?
I mean, I would also just enjoy how fervently Mel Kiper is going to be arguing with somebody on the sixth day about a backup quarterback that from like a Division II school that won 3 games and him just being like, he is ranked lower on my big board. No. A construction worker at Resorts World tested positive for Corona.
So to tie this into sports, there are two major construction projects going on in Las Vegas, Resorts World and Allegiant Stadium. Construction has been deemed essential on these projects. Now we have a positive test for someone working at a construction site with thousands of other workers. And at this point, it feels like it's just a matter of time before someone working at Allegiant Stadium tests positive for coronavirus. Yesterday, Steve Sisolak banned social gatherings of 10-plus people. He was asked at his press conference about the positive test at Resorts World, and he basically didn't have an answer for the time being. He said he's going to have to look into it more and consult some people about it. The thing that's bizarre to me is why these are still open is the first step pretty much every single city across the world took when it comes to the coronavirus is stopping events and stopping gatherings of over 1,000 people, right? That was like step number one was our sporting events and concerts were gone because it was more than 1,000 people, right? But yet we still have these construction sites going on where there's more than 1,000 people there and our governor's banning social gatherings of more than 10 people. It doesn't make any sense.
I mean... NHL teams will keep facilities closed through April 6th.
So that's a 10-day extension on the original plan from the NHL. They were allowing teams to open up their facilities the end of March. Now it's April 6th. And opening the facilities is what the NHL is calling the start of phase two to trying to resume the season. So delaying that means you're delaying a potential restart of the NHL season. I assume it's going to end up being beyond April 6th. What I think is going to be hard for the NHL and NBA to resume is that we're in a lot of different cities, right? Like, there's going to be a couple of, like, when we get to May and June, there's going to be places in the U.S. that are doing better. There are going to be places in the U.S., cities in the U.S. that are handling this a lot better. But there's going to be cities, whether it's New York or Oakland or Los Angeles, there's going to be cities that are not okay come June. And so if you're the NBA and the NHL, are you going to be able to restart a season in June and July when, okay, you know, cities in the Southwest or cities in the Midwest are fine, but we don't have half of our teams because California and New York still can't go outside?
I would almost think it would almost be inverted by that point.
Whatever point, like, you want it to be.
California, right, and New York were proactive about this. The Blues are completely borked.
Yeah, whatever way you want to go with it. Like, there's a chance that there's 10, 12, 20 of your teams are in cities that it's like, oh, nobody can go outside. But the rest of the teams, oh, we've done a good job. We can go outside now. To me, that's going to be a problem because you've got so many. It's a massive continent and we're all over it. Like, I don't know how this is going to work.
Yeah, across two countries.
Yeah.
This will be fun. Robbie Anderson signed a 2-year deal with the Panthers.
2 years, $20 million, $12 million in the first year, according to Adam Schefter. He was the top wide receiver in free agency, and the Raiders never made a real pursuit of him. But that isn't a ton of money for what was what's basically the highest paid free agency. The problem for Robbie Anderson and every other free agent wide receiver is the comparison to the rookie wide receiver class. Because if you're the Raiders, for example, Their first pick in the first round is number 12. If they take a wide receiver there, the cap hit is going to be $3 million. While Robbie Anderson's cap hit isn't crazy high, it's 3 or 4 times more than what a first-round wide receiver is going to cost. So value-wise, there's no way Robbie Anderson is giving you 3 or 4 times the production of a first-round wide receiver. So it's not the greatest idea to go and spend that money on Robbie Anderson.
You draft a guy, you keep him for 4 years, and then whenever you're supposed to be talking extensions, you call the Cowboys, you get your first round pick
a good
back.
Point.
This is just a system, man.
That is a good system. As long as that guy's not really good, like if he's the best wide receiver in the NFL, you might want to keep him.
When did the Raiders have Michael Thomas?
I wasn't suggesting Amari Cooper was the best. I was more about Khalil Mack.
The Panthers released Cam Newton.
So your free agent quarterbacks right now are Cam Newton, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton.
I want 2 out of 3. that took a step down real fast.
My question is on the AFC West. Would the Chargers be better off going and getting one of those quarterbacks than they are currently with their plan to go Tyrod Taylor and probably draft a rookie?
I would say 2 out of 3. Yes, they would be better. I don't think Andy Dalton, I don't, what has Andy Dalton done that makes anyone think that he can do anything? He's thrown to literally Tyler.
He had one good season, didn't he?
Yeah, where he was throwing to a healthy Tyler Eifert, a healthy AJ Green, a healthy, was it Boyd who was the other guy? And then he had Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard in the backfield. It's like,
if he goes to the Chargers, he'll have Hunter Henry, he'll have Keenan Allen, and he'll have Austin Eckler.
Okay. And somehow he'll still bleep the bed.
One's going to the Patriots?
The thing that everyone keeps saying that is if Bill Belichick can figure out what Cam Newton is texting him, he's going to sign Cam Newton to a 1-year deal.
See, I feel like it's more likely Bill Belichick would go get Will Greer and win the AFC East with him.
That does seem like his... I mean... Did Matt Cassel play a snap for USC when he drafted him? Like, I don't know if he did.
Like, we all want to see Cam Newton go to, like, the Patriots. Like, that seems like the most fun. Him or Jameis, either one would be the most fun outcome. But we know Bill Belichick's going to go pluck somebody's third-string quarterback who hasn't played in 2 years and say, yep, going 12 and what are they going to be? 12-5.
Is Rosen still out there?
Yes, Josh Rosen leading the Patriots to the AFC title game.
Rosen seems like a good one. But no, the reason is because the Patriots will take a one-year deal on basically anybody. Albert Haynesworth, Ocho Cinco. Like, if you look through, like, their guys that they're like, huh, you sort of flamed out. Yeah, we'll throw some money at you, see if you got anything left. Oh, you don't. Okay, bye.
Worked well with Antonio Brown.
It did until
for 1 week.
It's going to be great in Tampa. He already lives in Florida. And he's a Florida man. The USL has introduced the USL E-Cup Rocket League Edition.
Esports are here. So the USL.
I'm so happy.
The league that Lights FC are in are going to have members from organizations play in a big tournament of Rocket League. If you don't know what Rocket League is, it's essentially a video game that is Demolition Derby plus soccer. Basically, it's soccer with cars is what it is. They're going to do this tournament like the World Cup, where there's going to be a group stage. And everybody gets to play a few games, and then two teams advance out of each group into a knockout bracket. The drawing of the groups is tonight. The games don't actually start until next week, but I'm ready to go all in on this.
Okay.
Like, I'm ready for this too. To be, like, we are talking about Lights FC's Rocket League games. When they get eliminated, I don't know if I'll care.
No, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I feel like let's treat this like the men's World Cup team. Let's be very interested
until they somehow...
lose to a country that has less of a population than, you know, Waco, Texas.
Well, no, they're going to get out of the group stage if they're the U.S. men's national team. They're just going to lose in the round of 16.
I thought they lost to Trinidad and Tobago.
Well, was that? Okay, that was them not getting to the World Cup. Completely different. When they get there, they're going to do fine. They're going to make it to the round of 16. It's the problem of, oh, yeah, Trinidad and Tobago just knocked you out of World Cup qualifying. Not great. Joining us next, Mike Grillmala.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
You look great tonight, too. I don't know if you had a GQ photo shoot or something. You look awesome. Hair looks great, too. It's combed over.
I just noticed you left Mike's in there.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the best part. It's him just going, I know. This was my question.
Yeah. Mike Grimala joins us now as it is the offseason. Mike, do you know what show you're on?
This is Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff and JJ.
Yes, it is. Good job. I hear Jared screwed up yesterday on the press box.
Yeah, but you know, it probably wasn't his fault. I made him call all my different phones before he put me on, so I'm assuming he was discombobulated as they were coming back from break. So I'll take a little bit of responsibility for that, too.
Please don't. It's the fact that I labeled the sound of TJ Otzelberger talking about you as one thing and then the other one as a rejoin. They're not. I literally labeled things wrong.
Mike, before I
retract any responsibility.
Thank you.
Just all on him.
Mike, do you have any idea what Jared just explained, though?
That he did something wrong and it turned out bad and it was a big disaster.
Yeah, no, you did a terrible job explaining that.
I labeled...
No, you don't get a second chance. It wasn't that interesting anyways. We know. You mislabeled something. That's okay. Mike Grimal is here with us on the press box with Ed Graney and Clay Baker.
There we go.
All right, we're going to start with a little bit of UNLV basketball. Why is Amori Hardy transferring?
I think because he wanted to enjoy his senior year in a different way than what TJ Otzelberger had in mind for him at UNLV. Like, that's, we've talked about it before. Like, that's a kid who's put in his time for 3 years, gotten better every year, got a taste of what it's like to be the number one guy, you know, for the first half of this season. And with Bryce Hamilton's emergence in conference play and with David Jenkins being eligible next year, Hardy was going to go from, you know, being the number one guy to all of a sudden he's a senior, fourth year at the school, and now he's number three, and he's, you know, third in the pecking order but behind two other guys. I just don't think that appealed to him that much as a senior. And TJ Otzelberger is not the kind of guy who's going to tell him, what he wants to hear. He probably told him, like, hey, you're going to be a sixth man. You got to come off the bench and play less minutes. Jenkins and Hamilton have the green light. You got to work around them. And Hardy's a guy who's got options if he wants to go elsewhere. I mean, you've seen the list of teams that are interested in him. He can pick a team that's going to go to the NCAA tournament. He can get a coach who's going to tell him how much he can shoot the ball and how he can run the offense, and that probably just appealed to him more as a senior.
So all of that sounds reasonable, except for one detail you put in there. Sixth man. Why in the world would Amori Hardy be a sixth man?
I think because of the fit. If you want to get them, if you have, you know, high volume guys like Hamilton, Jenkins, and Hardy, the most efficient way to use all of them is probably to not have all three on the court at the same time. Maybe you want to stagger them a little bit. And if you're going to pick one guy to come off the bench to stagger, I see you got Coleman at point guard. You've got Hamilton and Jenkins as the other two guards. Hardy's probably the odd man out in that situation.
But we just saw them win five in a row and play the best basketball UNLV's probably played in a decade for five games because they had three guys that could create offense all on the floor together. Why would you want the third option coming off the bench?
We did. They're not going away from that. I mean, if you look at the way the recruiting is stacked up, like, they're going to be three, four guards permanently going forward. Like, the next year's team, the only front court guys, you know, we have are like Wood, Jong, and Delcadia. So, like, they're going to play four guards pretty much full time or a lot of the time. It's just sixth man, maybe too far. I personally think he would have come off the bench and been the sixth man. It might have been a situation where he started, but he's still third in the pecking order. It's still Hamilton getting 20, Jenkins getting 20, and then Hardy getting what's left over. And there are just better situations out there for him individually. I assume he's got, you know, hopes of playing professionally, probably wants to have a big senior year, play in the tournament, do all that. And he thought there was a better opportunity out there for him to do it. And since he can graduate and play immediately, there's really no downside for him.
So who's the third leading scorer on this team
next year? That's a good question. I think there's a pretty good chance it's one of your breakout freshmen. Like, I could see, you know, I could see Wood scoring 9 or 10 points a game, and that's your third best scorer. I could see Nick Blake scoring 10 points a game, maybe, if he develops. Maybe one of the other freshmen surprises and gives you 8 or 9 points a game, and that's your third high scorer. I think it's going to be a lot of Jenkins and Hamilton. Like, I think those are the two guys, and you sort of fill in the cracks around them. I don't know if it'll be a defined third scorer who gives you is your consistent number three guy every night, but they're deep enough that it's probably going to be someone different every night.
So the reason I make a big deal of the third scorer is every year that Otzelberger has been a coach, he's had a third player like that. Even his last year, South Dakota State, when Jenkins averaged 19.7 and Mike Dom averaged 25 a game, their third player still took 11 shots per game. Hardy only took 12.5 last year. Like, there's still shots to go around. It's not just shots to go around. To me, they need somebody to be a third option. Like, the idea that Jenkins and Hamilton are going to be enough for scoring 20 points per game, I don't think it is. I think they're going to have a third guy that is actually good next year for the entire season.
I don't view Marvin Coleman as like a natural scorer. I see him more as like a spot-up guy when the attention is drawn away from him. Jong is obviously not going to be that consistent third scorer. I don't think it's either of those two guys. Does it end up being Delcadia? Is he better than we know coming from the JUCO ranks? Is one of those freshmen like ready to play right away? Like, I'm not saying there won't be one. I just think it's probably not going to be consistent, and where it's going to take a while for them for that role to develop throughout the season. I don't think they're going to fire out of the gate saying like, hey, Donovan Yap, or hey, Nick Blake, or hey, Isaac Lindsay, you're the number three guy, go out there and score 14 points. It's probably going to, you know, they're going to define roles as we saw throughout the course of this season. They even right up until the very, you know, season finale, they were still sort of figuring it out. And I think you'll probably see something similar next year in terms of roles and who gets the shots.
Doesn't sound like a team going to the NCAA tournament. One of the stories you had recently was about Isaac Lindsay and how he has no plans to go to prep school.
I did have that story recently.
I know that wasn't a question, but Isaac Lindsay's not going to prep school?
I wouldn't say he's not going to prep school. I would say that as of now, he doesn't think he's going to prep school. But things can change. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. We know they're pretty much even on the scholarships right now, if you assume Tillman is leaving, which I think everyone is just taking for granted at this point, and that's probably going to happen. So they're even right now. In that case, you know, you'd bring Lindsay in here, and he'd play as a freshman. But if someone becomes available that they want, either in the grad transfer ranks or as a transfer or some 2020 recruit decommits or something happens and there's a guy they want to go out and get and you need to make one more scholarship available, like that's, in my eyes, that's the most obvious scenario. Maybe one or the other, because, you know, it's either him or it's either Lindsey, Tillman, or Yap. Those are your three, you know, true high school recruits who, you know, all haven't already prepped. So those are the guys who could, you know, tack on another year and help you. Lindsey just seems like the most obvious one, just because if you read that story, he had the injury that cost him his senior year of high school basketball. He had surgery. He's still rehabbing, so he's not even cleared to play basketball yet. So putting some time between, you know, that injury and giving him a full year to recover, I think, would also help. But as of now, they don't need him to do it. He's planning to come to UNLV. I think that could change, and if someone becomes available that they want, I think it will change.
All right, so if we go with your assumption that Tillman is transferring out, is this rostered NCAA tournament team next year?
I think so.
Really? That is optimistic for a lot of guys that haven't played basketball.
I put a lot of stock in the coaching. I really, really liked what they did this year, especially towards the end of the year. I think they would have won the Mountain West if Elijah Mitrulong had made it through the last 3 minutes at San Jose State. UNLV was getting better and better. You saw San Diego State was getting worse towards the end of the year. Utah State was a team that we saw UNLV beat once, lose once. I thought UNLV was playing really well at the end of the year. I put a lot of stock in coaching. I like the recruits they're bringing in now that I've had a chance to sit down and, you know, watch some of their video from last year. I think they're going to have a lot of weapons. I just have a lot of faith in Otzelberger that he'll figure it out by the end of the year and they'll have everyone at their most productive. I think they, you know, the schedule is not an automatic, like, if you can get a couple more premium games or another premium game, I think there's potential to be an at-large team at the end of the year if they play well.
He's never seen a steak that is too gray. He once ate half a box of Cheez-Its for lunch and finished off the other half for dinner. He has eaten exactly one taco in his life. He is Mike Grillmala.
Have tacos changed that much since I tried one?
All right, Mike Grillmala, what are you eating during quarantine?
Nothing. There's nothing available, at least at my grocery store. I got the last box of pasta 2 weeks ago at my grocery store. I haven't seen one since, and that ran out. What I made 2 days ago, the only thing available, you know, there's no, like, beef, there's no hot dogs, there's no, like, anything except there were pork chops.
And
so
pork
chops? I made them. I went and got the, I grabbed the pork chops from the meat section, then I went to the baking section, and I got, like, the shake and bake, you know?
All right.
Shake and bake and the pork chops.
It's okay. This is big stuff.
I put them in the bag. I shook it up after rinsing them off, of course, and proper hygiene and everything. And then I threw them in the oven. And they came out okay.
There you go. So wait, so that's one meal. You've been, like, working from home for, like, 2 weeks. What else have you eaten?
Oh, peanut butter sandwiches all day.
Okay.
You had bread?
That's the staple. That's what's keeping me alive. Like, that's the basic, you know, life force is peanut butter sandwich. But the one thing I cooked, kind of interesting, was the shake and bake pork chops, and they came out really well.
Okay, that's fine. I've eaten a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
I'm sure they came out very well done.
But we should make a note that you are not misspeaking when you say peanut butter sandwich. They are, in fact, just peanut butter sandwiches.
Yeah, I don't do jelly. I've never had jelly. I'm never going to have it. It does not appeal to me combined with peanut butter. It's just bread, a layer of peanut butter, and then another slice of bread.
Okay, but you've decided after never having it that you're never going to have it.
Yeah. I don't like it.
How do you know? You've never had it.
I just know. I know I'm not going to. I look at it. I see what it's all about. I don't want any part of it. Peanut butter is more than enough to stand on its own. That's my favorite food.
I mean, I can't knock him. Peanut butter's really good.
It is.
Not gonna spoil it with jelly.
You should try it.
Have you ever had cashew butter?
No. I've had cashews, though.
Well, think of that concept, but similar consistency to peanut butter.
No. I mean, if you know, if this thing goes on for another couple of weeks and that's the only thing available at the store, I may be having cashew butter sandwiches before this is all said and done.
So you haven't risked your quarantine safety to, like, go to Cane's or something?
No.
Okay. You are just...
It doesn't seem safe. Not just the food preparation, but just, you know, handling the box and handling, you know, everything that you, you know, the transaction and the counter, that all, you know... The
counter?
Yeah.
Thought everything was drive-through only now.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Like, they're still, like, handing you a bag. They're taking your card. They're running your card. They're handing it back. It's a whole rigmarole that I don't want to be a part of.
You got to get Apple Pay on your phone. You can just touchless scan it.
Just Star Trek phaser them the money.
Yeah, that'll be fine. All right. He's Mike Grimala, terrified to go outside and living on just peanut butter sandwiches at the moment. But I'm proud of you for making those pork chops.
They were good. I mean, if they have more of them, I'm going to make some more. So if you, you can't come over, but I'll leave them outside the door if you want to swing by and pick them up.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye. Oh, I cut him off.
He was going to invite me over to have his pork chops. I'll go eat his pork chops. That is to be the next step of Mike Grimala.
As long as it's you, Mike, and like seven more people.
We're good?
We're fine.
Okay. That needs to be the next step of Mike Grimala. Whenever all this ends, he cooks for people.
Wait, all this ends? Do you mean like post-apocalypse?
Yeah, after the apocalypse is over. He'll be safe. He's not going outside to risk his life at Cane's. So he'll be fine, and he can cook for us.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter at @Bischoff_Tyler.
Hey, it's Tyler Bischoff. The best spot to place your bets is the Orleans Casino Race and Sportsbook. But if you're looking for even more convenience, download the Be Connected Sports app from BeConnectedSports.com. The Be Connected Sports app makes it easy to place bets from your phone or tablet and allows you to bet during the game. So download the Be Connected Sports app and you can be just a few clicks away from betting on the biggest games whenever you want. Boyd Gaming has you covered at the Orleans Casino Race and Sportsbook or at BeConnectedSports.com.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
It is my way of being on the morning and I'm not doing our thing. It is my way of being on the morning and I'm not doing our thing. It is my way of coming to the microphone with the time spent on.
What was that?
Okay, Lamborghini Mercy. Yo, chick, she's so thirsty.
I'm not sure if this is the edited version, so I'm going to turn it down.
What, did you just find that?
Yes.
Okay.
Would you like me
so you to... Have the perks of you working the press box, or you just start finding things within our system to play?
I have to make mistakes somehow, and most of it's because I'm jacking around on the computer.
All right.
My headphones get stuck underneath my chair.
Jared likes to jack around on the computer.
Dude, they said stay home.
That's a good point. That is a good point. Jacking around on the computer is the safest thing you can do. Right now. All right. Tonight, UNLV Loyola Marymount, 7 p.m. Twitter and Periscope at @Bischoff_Tyler. We will be streaming that game from the Elite Eight. It is the highest scoring game of the NCAA tournament for UNLV. It's the third highest scoring game of the NCAA tournament all time. Somehow Loyola Marymount had two other games that were higher scoring than this, one in this tournament already. So Loyola Marymount scored a ton of points.
Not good at defense.
Yeah, not that good. But this is the game that I've been waiting for this UNLV team because they scored 131 points, right? Like this has to be the game that people like or think of when they say we love the UNLV team. Right, we loved the way they played.
I mean, they beat the brakes off Duke.
We haven't gotten there yet.
I know.
I haven't gotten to that point yet. But like
that hasn't happened yet.
Like the first round game, we didn't watch that one because it doesn't exist on the internet, but it's against the 16 seed, not important. Second round game against Ohio State, kind of boring, right? It was mostly just half-court offense with a bunch of post-ups. There wasn't very much transition. The game against Ball State, there was a handful of transition plays, mostly Stacey Augmon, but at the end of the day, neither team actually broke 70 in that game. Now I get a game where both teams break 100. Like, this is the one I want to see. This is the one I want to see teams going up and down the floor a lot. I'm a little afraid there's going to be, like, 3,000 free throws, and that's how these teams got so many points.
Except, remember, you missed the first one.
That's a good point.
You don't get the second one.
That's a good point. So, yeah, UNLV not great at free throws, so it can't be free throws. So this is the one I'm ready for. And also, they played already in the season. They played in the first game of the season for UNLV. I think they both scored 100 points in that one, too. We should be rewatching Loyola Marymount games.
Well, didn't they play them last year?
Yes, they did.
And it was supposed to be like, it's the... it's.
But Marvin Menzies was here.
Yeah, I know. So it was like we were, it was hyped up as this like throwback. Yeah, remember when these two teams were good? Oh, this is sad.
Yep. So today's the 30th anniversary of that game from 1990. Again, if you don't have any idea what we're doing, Twitter, 7 p.m. tonight, we're rewatching that game and every game from UNLV's run in the 1990 NCAA tournament. So 7 p.m. tonight at Bischoff underscore Tyler. Come by. We're going to watch UNLV Loyola Marymount score a ton of points, over 230 points between the two of them. It'll be fun.
When you guys figure out the dumpster fire that Bischoff is, the experiment failed.